All right. This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 126 for Thursday, March 27th, 2008. Hello everyone, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is Norm, Senior Executive Intern, hosting this week. We have a lot of news to cover and a bunch of people joining us. We have our Editor-in-Chief, Kristen Salvatore.
Hey, hey.
Our Senior Executive Editor, Chuck Osborne.
Hey, hey, hey.
Senior Associate Editor, Dan Stapleton.
Just one hey.
Our Ex-Intern-Intern, Andy.
Hello.
And also, of course, our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hey guys, what's up?
Awesome, let's get right into the news. We've talked about Battlefield Heroes in the past and how there's been some debate over whether EA is going to charge for weapons in the game that can change how you play. But it was recently leaked out this past week that they're actually charging for weapons in their console version of Battlefield, Battlefield Bad Company. Dan, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, according to the... I don't know if it was leaked. It was like people playing the beta. There are 20 weapons that you can unlock. 10 you can unlock through just playing the game, and another 10 you have to buy using Xbox Live points, which is actual money. So that Penny Arcade did a comic on this where they have like the inevitable conclusion of this line of this direction where they've got a giant robot guy on a football field just ripping apart the opposing team. If you're in Madden, you can buy upgrades until you're playing with huge robot players, which it's a good analogy.
I mean, so what they're saying is that this is a bad idea and it's just going to snowball. It's just another example of EA charging people for things that you would normally be expected you wouldn't have expected to pay for a year ago.
It's not even so much that you're not expecting to pay for it. It's that if some people can pay for it and therefore get an advantage, if you don't pay for it, then you're screwed. So you end up paying more. And like Battlefield Bad Company is going to be a full price game. So you're going to end up paying more just to be competitive in that game.
But isn't one of the galling things about this is that the weapons that you're supposedly unlocking by paying for them are actually already in the game code?
It's yes, I think that was an issue. I mean, with the same thing happened with Godfather, I think, which is also a release by EA. There were other sports games too. There were game items in the game, or maybe cheat codes in the game that you can't unlock through gameplay. You only can buy them through like Xbox Live Arcade or Xbox Live Marketplace.
Right, and the really obnoxious part is that it's already there. It's not like you're downloading extra content and paying for that. It's already in the game that you've paid for. You just can't play with it until you pay more.
Now, even though, I mean, this hasn't officially been announced by EA yet, but we don't know whether these weapons will actually have any gameplay effects. I mean, whether they'll be stronger than the weapons already in the game or whether they'll just be aesthetic differences.
I don't know. If they're aesthetic differences, it's not worth paying anything for, so I doubt they would do that. And if they are not like more powerful than the standard weapons, they've got to be different somehow. And just that versatility is an advantage.
Well, what EA did respond, and they said that these five unique weapons are actually going to be given away if you buy the gold edition of Battlefield Bad Company. But if you don't buy the special edition, you can buy them, after you buy the regular game.
Right. So if you buy the gold edition, which costs more, you get. The weapons that you can buy, it's the same thing, and you're paying more either way.
I mean, isn't that just something that we've seen before, though? If you buy a collector's edition, you get like a special pet or you get a special weapon. I mean,
sure,
that happens all the time,
we've
right?
seen it with MMOs before. I don't think we've really seen it with first-person shooters, though.
But I mean, what MMO has packaged an item that has actually changed the way the gameplay plays out? I mean, like City of Heroes did it, and they just gave you like a hover mode that just looked different. Who else did something like that where you got
I know that Age of Conan, Warhammer Online in its special collector's edition is planning on including some special in-game items that will actually help you.
Yeah,
they'll buff you up.
Is that so bad?
It bothers me a little bit. I mean, it's not like it probably wouldn't keep me from playing the game, but I would feel a little bit weird about that. It bothers me that I would have to pay more for an in-game advantage.
Right, yeah, and keep in mind this is different from like a pre-order promotion where if you buy a game at GameSpot, you know, you get an unlock code. I know they did it with Rainbow Six Vegas too, where if you bought the game at a certain retailer, you get a code inside the box that would let you get, you know, unlock a special weapon. But then you didn't, you know, anyone who didn't buy from that retailer could copy the code and also use it and wouldn't have to pay for it. But anyway, hopefully this doesn't mean that Battlefield Heroes is going to be similar.
Well, I mean, we already know that they're doing buffs in a similar way, where you can buy the experience point buffs. We don't know anything about weapons.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's out to see.
I mean, it seems to be an overall like direction that EA wants to go in, and if they make a lot of money in this, it may end up being, you know, a situation similar to what Penny Arcade described, where people that are playing just the game they paid for, or you know, the basic game, have little or no chance against people that are paying more.
Well, what about, for example, if you know, one of the weapons that you bought was sort of like a futuristic looking weapon, but it basically had the same abilities as an old fashioned rifle or shotgun?
Well, and if it just looks different and it doesn't do anything at all different, then
you're gonna pay for that.
Yeah, you're crazy to pay for it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, a lot of people, though, well, you know, yeah, especially in MMOs, they want to pay a little bit extra just for the bragging rights.
Right, right. But right, and in a lot of cases, in like the City of Heroes thing I described, it does look different and it looks cool, but it doesn't do anything really. So, but yeah, it's kind of a shaky area.
I think when the aesthetic difference is what's at hand, it wouldn't be too bad for paying for it. Because, like, I paid extra for the you know, the collector's edition of WoW so I could get the cool little pet in-game. But if what we're talking about is, like, a gun that can actually change your in-game performance, it can be really debatable on that point.
Yeah, it's like if suddenly you can buy a railgun, you know,
yeah,
something that would just destroy the balance of the game, that would be bad. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Well, what's for sure is that definitely the fans are up in arms. I mean, a ton of people are playing the beta right now, even though it's just a console game. But people don't like this idea that you have to pay to get a special advantage. Another, I have no idea how to transition this Illinois story.
That's okay.
It's unsegueable.
Yeah, no, it really isn't segueable.
There's money involved in both.
Well, I'd rather spend money on in-game weapons than spend it on legal fees. Like,
well,
the state of Illinois has to.
Well done, Don. Well done.
Wow.
So we have this news story. What's recently been discovered is that the state of Illinois lost this court case against the ESA when they tried to make the sale of violent and sexually explicit video games illegal back in 2005.
And the ESA,
to minors, right. Basically, they wanted to make it illegal for a store to sell like a rated M game to a minor, and which is totally unconstitutional. And they knew, I mean, the ESA knew going into the litigation that it would be overturned. But ESA
right,
has
ESA
sued.
Knew it. ESA knew it, and the Illinois legislature knew it.
Right.
But they passed it anyway to pander to voters.
Because right, all legislation relating to like similar lists has been overturned in the past. And the ESA sued the state of Illinois for their legal fees for the amount of $500,000, which they won. So what's recently been discovered is where this money is actually coming from. And it turns out it's coming from a lot of social services, like healthcare, right?
Right. A percentage of it at least came from the Department of Health Services, which is affecting like retirement communities and things like that that receive state funding. Which, you know, it's just, you know, going to show the not only the futility of these anti-game laws, but that they're actually destructive to everything else. You know, they are wasting resources from, you know, that would otherwise go to serve people.
I love it when we have these conversations because I love hearing Dan get all worked up.
it really does drive me nuts that
I know it
that
does. I know this, it does.
That they're just amazingly wasteful, and they knowingly do this, knowing like being fully aware of the precedent and knowing that it's not going to survive a court challenge.
Do you see the media twisting this up and saying, you know, ESA, you know, video games rob our grandparents of their, you know, healthcare money?
No, because I don't think there's any way that they can present this case in a way that doesn't, you know, make it blatantly obvious that they should never have done this in the first place.
Yeah, there's a quote from Doug Lowenstein, who was the president of the ESA back when Illinois filed the case, and he says that, you know, from the day the governor of Illinois announced that he would seek the anti-video game legislation, it's clear that, you know, from everyone involved that the proposal would be overturned, and they proposed alternatives, but the state just didn't want to pursue them.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's basically saying, I told you so, you know, we warned you this would happen, and they did.
But do you see, I mean, is it going to be a wake-up call to other states, or do you see other states still pursuing the video game legislation?
I kind of doubt it, because they seem just dead set on pursuing this same thing over and over again. They just don't learn, or they know exactly what's going to happen, but they do it anyway because they can then turn around when they're running for re-election saying, I passed this bill that protects your kids from evil video games, even though it was overturned. They can still say they passed it.
Mm. That's unfortunate. Well, to more somber news, or actually, well, I guess this could be considered good news. Brad Wardell, he's from Stardock. He's one of the, is he the president?
He's the founder and CEO of Stardock.
Founder and CEO of Stardock, who the company which has created one of our favorite new RTS games, Sins of a Solar Empire, has made some recent comments about piracy and how it affects PC gaming.
Some somewhat controversial comments, too, I might add.
How are they controversial?
Well, basically, he's saying that, you know, PC game developers should not worry about piracy at all. And they shouldn't worry about putting anti-piracy measures into their games, because if it's a good game, people are going to buy it.
And the people that aren't going to buy it weren't going to buy it anyway, so just ignore them is his point. And, you know, it's controversial because it does fly in the face of what every other game publisher out there is doing, which is putting all this copy protection on their games, which then annoys the paying customers.
Yeah, I mean,
and
Chris
Sins
Taylor...
of the Solar Empire does not have any copy protection in it, and I think it was number two on the list of top selling games.
Oh,
like,
it's been in
ago?
The top 10, you know, yeah, since it's come out.
Right.
The lowest I've seen it has been number four, which I think was this past week, but it's still out selling well.
Yeah, it's selling well.
How many weeks has it been out now?
What, like six-ish? I'm not exactly sure.
It sold like 100,000 copies within the first 10
more
days
than
or
that,
so.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, so within the first 2 weeks, I think it was 100,000 copies.
Right.
I was just sort of interested to see whether games that we aren't necessarily expecting to be blockbusters like that, I've been sort of watching to see when they end up being slightly sleeper hits. But that doesn't really qualify as a sleeper hit. That sounds like it did really well out of the gate. So.
Yeah, I think that's a bona fide hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, the number of copies that you see with, you know, a Call of Duty or something like that, but it's also built on a much smaller budget. So the profit to Stardock and Ironclad, the publisher and developer, is you know, a better ratio than if they spent.
Do you think that's it's the case that the game, maybe Sins of Solar Empire, wasn't pirated because there was the buzz surrounding it before the game came out wasn't as high as, you know, say like Assassin's Creed?
I don't think it's fair to say that it was not pirated. I know for a fact that it has been pirated. I mean, we've gotten email from people saying I pirated this game, and that really annoys the hell out of me. Why do people email us saying I pirated this game and here's what I think about it? We don't want to hear from you if you pirate games because you're not. Sorry.
I was going to say the funny thing is for a completely different game that I was playing. I actually saw on their forums somebody said, yeah, I picked this up off a Ware site and I'm having problems with it.
Oh yeah, people do that all the time, and like in fact, with Iron Lore, the developers of Titan Quest that recently closed their doors, they got a bad reputation for bugginess on Titan Quest. Like one of the guys associated with it posted this big long thing about like a postmortem on the company, and they was saying that they got a bad reputation on Titan Quest for bugginess because somebody got a hold of a pirated copy that had. A anti-piracy check in there that just closes out of the game at random points to prevent you from, you know, prevent people from pirating the game. So people were thinking this is just a crash of desktop bug. So all these people were complaining about how it crashes all the time. But it was actually an anti-piracy thing. So,
but he actually goes and he wrote a pretty long letter, and he actually lists like some of the reasons why he thinks that their games, which may still be, you know, pirated.
You're talking about Brad Wardell here.
Right. I'm talking about Brad Wardell. I'm sorry. You know, one of those being that you don't try and make a game for a specific target market. Like, you know, if you're trying to make a game just for the Chinese market, then it's probably going to have less of a chance of taking off. Also, he, you know, kind of like targets a lot of the people who, for example, didn't buy Crysis or BioShock, expecting to have too high of system requirements, you know, expecting gamers to have really, really beefy machines, whereas he designed this game to be run on a more mid-level spec machine.
Well, he didn't design the game.
Well,
to be clear.
His company, sorry.
Well, his company didn't design the game either. Ironclad did. His company published the game. Oh. They did contribute to the design somewhat, but they didn't design the game. But in any case, the point is that you know they had confidence in this game because it was designed to run on a wide variety of systems, and that is a very good a good business decision, and that's something Blizzard does a lot. All of their games are designed to run on a lot of systems, like, you know, even pretty low end systems, like a laptop with an integrated graphics chip will be able to run WoW, and because of that they're able to sell 10 million copies of the thing. So it's a really good idea to allow a lot of people to run your game.
And let's make it clear, I mean, Sins of a Solar Empire doesn't have copy protection, but it does have ways to keep you from pirating the game or from updating the game if you didn't buy a legitimate copy. You have to use a serial code to register online so you can get patches and stuff.
Right. Well, and you could pirate those too, but it's a hassle. But basically, their philosophy is to just provide you with the service of continually updating your game, and, you know, giving you a little bit of extra content, making it easy on you, rather than punishing you for like treating you like a criminal.
He goes on to say in his article or letter or whatever it is, he's saying that he had a hard time getting editorial coverage in magazines, but I feel like Sins of the Solar Empire was sort of a
I don't think with us. I mean, this game was all Dan could talk about for quite a while.
That's all I remember.
when he first brought it by to show it off, I loved what I saw, and I gave it a big spread and preview twice actually.
I do see what he means though, in that it wasn't as hyped up, you know, as a game Crysis or like a game like BioShock.
Well, and it doesn't quite have the wide spectrum of appeal that we look for, like for games that we put on the cover that like a lot of people are going to be really interested in. It is kind of a niche game, but it's definitely a niche I'm into. So I was really excited about it, and a lot of other people are too.
Yeah, I mean, actually, one of the things that he says in the article, which I kind of disagree with, is that he says that he tries to make the claim that this game is not for hardcore gamers. And I just don't get that. It seems like a pretty hardcore game to me.
Not really. You don't have to be hardcore to enjoy it.
I mean, just because, you know, we spend 5 hours playing a game, you know, a round of this game, doesn't mean we need to be hardcore players to play it. It's very user-friendly.
That's actually sort of what I was about to get at, is despite the fact that certainly PC Gamer, like, we make a point of discussing the fact that we aim to speak to hardcore PC gamers, I actually think that in a lot of ways, like, that kind of, that label has become a really divisive one in a way that doesn't help any of us, that doesn't help any PC gamers, that it gets bandied around as a sort of way to, like, lock people out of PC gaming in a way that we don't really need to be doing. That bugs me.
Oh, I mean, sure. Certain games.
That's
certain
my
games,
hater minute.
So. Yeah, I mean, we're at heart, we're all gamers, and so that's right. That's why it kind of bugs me when, you know, myself, it's like when I'm playing Peggle and somebody looks at me and goes, "Well, that's not a real game," you know, or if I'm playing a game on a console or a portable, you know, it's like, "Well, that's not a real game. I'd rather be playing a game on, you know, a better looking game. You know, it has to have a 3D card in order to be considered a game. No, it doesn't."
Now, I have never said that Peggle is not a real game.
I was not targeting you.
It's a trap!
This is your own guilty conscience coming back to haunt you, Dan.
Never once have I said that. You know, we've had just debates about the categorization of these things, but I never said it wasn't a game.
All right, moving on from so we talked a lot about Sins of a Solar Empire, one of our current favorite RTSs, but one of our favorite RTSs of last year was World in Conflict, and sounds like we'll be getting a lot more World in Conflict with a recently revealed, not officially announced, I think, but just revealed expansion pack. It's called World in Conflict Soviet Assault, and this is the repackaged World in Conflict with new stuff that's also going to appear on consoles. What's going to be in this new?
Well, the difference is, okay, so it's actually two things. So what it is, the Soviet Assault name, actually, what they're talking about in this article is the console version. However, this content will likely also appear in an expansion pack for the PC, which has not yet been announced. So it's you know, a little bit shaky here, but what they're talking about doing is having a campaign from the Soviet side, which we didn't see in the first game, or in the original World in Conflict, which I'm looking forward to seeing. I mean, based on multiplayer, the differences between the sides are kind of limited. They did kind of make it symmetrical, but they are talking about some new units in here, like a hybrid plane boat, or some kind of seaplane, I guess, and a few other things that could be, you know, game changers. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, and they're definitely adding new maps and things like that. And the campaign in World in Conflict, some people didn't like it very much. I liked the story. I did not so like the AI was a little bit basic. They just threw tons and tons of units at you and didn't really do much with them except throw them at you. But yeah, it was entertaining. So more is always better.
I'm holding out for World in Peace. all this conflict, it's just so negative.
Well, can't I we like all universe in conflict.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Universe of War.
Close. All right, speaking of expansion packs for RTSs, the expansion pack for Command & Conquer 3 is now out, Kane's Ooh. Wrath, out in stores. Dan, I know you've been playing it. Without giving away, you know, your review, you want to give some quick impressions, what you thought about the game?
It's got some very cool new units in there. Like the Skryn Mechapede is very cool. It's you start out with like the head section, and then you can like build additional sections that are aimed at, you know, or anti-air, anti-infantry, anti-vehicle, you know, seven additional sections. So you can really customize a HUD at this unit. I kicked Chris's ass with one of them the other day. That was fun. The cinematics, I think they've made it even cheesier than before. Which,
yes,
you know,
that's all I want to know about. How awesome is FMV? I mean, you have new actors? Is that
There are some new actors. They've got what is his name? The guy he played the Martian Manhunter on the Justice League animated show.
He was on Alias. What's his name?
Yeah. That guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also Natasha Henstridge.
Natasha Henstridge is in here from Species Fame.
Why, hello?
So no
and
Trisha
from wasn't there some ridiculous show that she was on where
she's a spy, that's right.
Yeah, what was that show?
She Spies.
It was campy and hilarious.
Oh, She Spies. Oh,
is that what
yeah.
it was? Oh, I loved
yeah,
that show.
Yeah, I remember that.
it was like syndicated, you know, action.
So no who?
No, what's her name from Battlestar Galactica?
Grace Park?
And the Cylon one.
Oh, Trisha Helfer. No, neither of them are in the and Josh, what's his name from Lost, is not in there either.
Hallway, right.
Oh, so the gentleman we were thinking of, his name is Carl Lumley.
Lumley, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he plays both of those actors play Nod characters, and the whole campaign is from the Nod perspective as well.
And of course, Kane is back.
Yes.
So just how mad is Kane?
he is fairly wrathful. one thing that was disappointing about it was so far is I played a skirmish against the AI on hard, and for some reason it kept sending like groups of four or five anti-air vehicles by themselves into my base when I didn't even have any air vehicles or air, you know, units. So that like the AI may or may not know how to use all of its units, all like the new units that they've added, which is a little bit disappointing if you're buying it to play like against the skirmish AI.
So we have a bunch of games, actually. I mean, 2008 looks fantastic. The fall of 2008, especially. One of the biggest games coming out later this year is Fallout 3. I know, Dan, really excited about that, even though you probably can't shoot rats in the nads.
yeah, that was one of my biggest disappointments about Fallout. You know, when I went out to Bethesda for the first look, and they were showing off the VATS targeting system, where, you know, it's an homage to the original thing, like point and click at body parts where you want to shoot people. They always used to have in Fallout 1 and 2, they had, you could shoot people in the groin, and they do not have that in the VATS targeting system. I was heartbroken.
And we heard about that for days and days. I'm pretty sure that genitalia is just not safe around you.
No, it's really not.
But Todd Howard has now...
Todd Howard, who is?
Oh, who's the president of Bethesda.
He's not the president of Bethesda.
He's not the president? He's the designer?
He's the producer.
Producer. Todd Howard, producer at Bethesda, who's developing Fallout 3, recently sent an interview that Fallout 3, they're working on the ending right now. The game's almost done, but the game at this point has about 200 different endings, at least 200 endings.
Oh, yes.
That's just amazing. I'm really fascinated to see how they do that. I wonder if it's going to be the same kind of thing they did in Fallout 2, where there are different endings for different, like, it's like at the end it shows like a montage of endings of all the places you visited and what happened to all of those. So what they could be talking about there is, like, there are 200 different combinations of endings.
I think that
would be my guess.
No, that'd be two.
No, I think that is what he was saying. It's like iterations of the ending. There's 200 iterations.
It has to be. There's no way there's 200 distinct endings.
Not unique ones.
I feel
like... he says here that there's at least maybe 9 to 12 different original endings, and then those get extrapolated to 200 depending on how you play the game.
Yeah. I feel like I should know more about this because... this was on the OXM podcast, which I also produce. All the news sites picked up his interview and it's been blowing up, which is kind of cool. I felt pretty sweet about that. But I really didn't pay much attention to what he was saying at the time, so I can't provide more insight. I guess I could play some of the clips here, but...
Fallout's probably twice the size that we originally had on paper, like the entire game. It's pretty big, so that's happened with the endings. So some of that stuff are the big things that you do very late in the game. Mm-hmm. Some of those are things like your karma, how you've lived your life from the beginning of the game. You know, you'll get certain scenes based on your karma. But we kind of like the ending as much as like the game itself in the beginning is you tailoring your character, and then you play throughout this game. And unlike the Elder Scrolls, where it's a game where you can keep playing, Fallout 3 has a definite ending.
Right.
We felt pretty strongly that, you know, what efforts can we go to make the actual ending that you get when you finish, you get the achievement, you put your controller down, what are you going to see? And as much as we can, make that ending reflect, make it as individual to you as we can. So we've definitely gone overboard.
What he also said was that the game would have, I mean, if you play straight through, it'll be about 20 to 40 hours, but, It can be 100 hours of gameplay. Even though it's not as big as Oblivion, the game world, there's so much to do in the game that you can spend easily 100 hours playing the game.
I'll spend much more than that.
Sure. Because you're going to go and get each and every one of those 200 endings, aren't you?
Even without the groin shooting. Wow.
Yeah.
And Deslock was talking about how long he'd spent playing Oblivion, which was like
he's still playing it.
In the hundreds of hours, and you know, well above the, you know, recommended amount of time, or like the stated amount of time you'd spend.
The recommended amount of time.
I think the FDA recommends
you play this
game
for 75 hours.
Right, no more, no less. Yeah. So, but there. In a world like that where there are just, you know, there's emergent gameplay because of physics and crazy AI stuff and things like that, there are just extra things you can do that will extend the life of the game.
I think one thing that sets Fallout 3 different from Oblivion, where as in Oblivion you can finish the story and keep playing. That's what I think Deslock did to reach his 300-hour club thing that he was talking about. But in Fallout 3, I think once you hit endgame, I think it ends.
Maybe. I'm not sure about that. I will have to wait and see more about how the game ends.
Yeah.
Because I know in Fallout 1 and 2, Fallout 1 definitely had an ending. I don't remember if Fallout 2 lets you keep going after the ending. I usually avoided the ending if I just wanted to walk around and explore. So I didn't finish the game that many times.
Yeah. I don't remember Fallout 2 either. I'm fuzzy on that.
Well, another game that had multiple endings and has a sequel coming out later this year is Stalker Clear Sky, which now has an official release date, a worldwide release date of August 29th, 2008. I presume that's also when it's going to be available on Steam. And you guys are looking forward to this game, right? Did you guys play original Stalker?
Yes.
I haven't, actually.
Oh, you should play it.
I've played some of it. I still have not finished it.
It's a long game.
The other thing's going on. It's a really long game, and it's hard.
Oh, it's very hard. I mean,
really hard.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's actually not a bad thing. But
there's a nice. Go ahead.
When I tried to start playing it, Vista had just come out, and it did not. And I had Vista on my gaming PC just because I was stupid, and and it did not play well with Vista. So I put it aside until it got fixed and never. Got around to going back to it, but maybe I'll put my Delta replay of Crysis off to the side for a while and start that.
Yeah, Stalker, we have a nice preview of Clear Sky in our latest issue. The cover is Welcome to the Gun Show. And this is Stalker Clear Sky is supposed to be a prequel. So you actually play through a lot of the same areas that you play through in Stalker, but it looks completely different, and the engine has been upgraded significantly, so it looks really cool. I mean, it makes a lot. It uses DX10 effects and a lot of cool lighting stuff.
Well, what's also kind of cool about it is that the developers, GSC World, they originally had some really big plans for the original Stalker, and they had to scale down their plans considerably and make the game a little bit much simpler than they originally planned. And I think now in Clear Sky, they're planning to implement some of those ideas, giving you more factions to play with, beefing up the AI considerably to really make it more of a real world setting that you're going into with, people who have their own agendas.
I'm really impressed that they actually they're going to get Clear Sky. I mean, hopefully it'll come out on time, but I'm impressed that they could, turn it around in a year and a half, since the original Stalker was almost abandonware for a while. I mean, almost
vaporware.
Yeah, vaporware.
Yeah, Dan Morris had a he would have bet any of us if we had taken him up on it that it would never come out. Wish we had.
And it did, and it surprised us all in how good it was. Not that it just came out. Other games coming out.
That was a surprise as well that it came out.
Other exciting games coming out later this year: Far Cry 2 and Warhammer. Although those have been delayed a little bit, they're still coming out. End of this year, fall 2008. Along with Fallout 3, all for fall 2008.
It's gonna be busy.
Exciting fall. But for games that are already out now, a ton of upgrades and new content being released. There's new World of Warcraft patch version 2.4 that apparently has a lot of new content. And Andy, ex-intern Andy, being still our resident WoW expert. Do you want to tell us what's in the new patch?
Yeah, absolutely. I've really been having a blast with this since it came out. It's only been out for a few days, but there's a brand new island that they released with a new 5-man dungeon, which has been really fun. It's not easy. It's really a challenging time, and it's a lot of fun. It's filled with lore, and it's called the Isle of Quel'Danas.
And have you run the instance yet?
I have, yeah. It was actually pretty difficult. I'm in a big endgame guild, and we had some guys in tier 6, which is the best armor you can get in the game right now, and we embarrassingly wiped a couple times. So that was kind of cool. But there's also tons of what they're called as daily quests, and you can go there, do them each day, and you make a good amount of coin. But at the same time, too, you're doing a server-wide event that's unlocking different parts of the island as you continue to do them. And it's actually kind of fun, because this hasn't happened since before Burning Crusade was released, a big server-wide thing like this. So it's actually kind of cool to go out there and work side-by-side or, kill the other faction if you want to. And there's also a big new 25-man raid instance, which is really difficult. The guild I'm in has Illidan Stormrage, the previous last boss of the game. on farm. Like we can take them down no problem. But this place has been giving us a pretty big challenge. We've only gotten the first boss in the instance to 50% health. So there's a lot of cool stuff that just came out, and there's also been class changes and everything that have happened.
Yeah, there have been some controversies, as there always is with a patch to WoW that changes the balance. Are there any real big points of contention?
Noticeably, druids have been very nerfed. Like for Arena, they a lot of their spells, the range has been reduced, and some of the healing has been reduced. But it's nothing life changing. It's just stuff that people are going to have to learn. Mildly change their tactics and stuff.
So, in your expert opinion, the druids were not unfairly nerfed.
I don't think so. No, there's one thing that changed where there's a set bonus on their arena armor, which allows them to run faster than they normally would be able to in their different forms, and that was taken away, which I think maybe is a little unfair because sometimes if you're that kind of a class and you have low armor, you need to be able to get the get out of situations really fast. And other than that, I don't think anything is too life changing.
So good patch or bad patch?
I think it's a great
perfect.
One. Great patch, lots of new content. Nothing that's no matter how much or how little you play the game, it's stuff you can definitely see. So, as usual, I think it's a really, really solid content.
So great patch or the greatest patch?
God, I don't know. There have been some great patches.
What is your favorite patch? From WoW. What's the best?
my favorite one was actually the last server wide event. It was the opening of the Gates of Ankaraj back before Burning Crusade. Just because I still got a sweet spot in my heart for the old 40 man raid instances and stuff.
Well, hopefully they'll do a few more of those in the future. I guess they decided to move away from that to make it a little bit more friendly to the casual players.
Yeah, that, and when you have 40 people in a raid as opposed to 25, there's a pretty good chance that some of the people can just kind of do whatever, and you can still get away with 30 or even 20 in some cases, 20 people carrying the other 20. But in a 25 raid instance, 25 man raid instance rather, there's a role for each person that definitely has to be fulfilled. So it's a lot more involved.
Well, so it sounds like with this patch, Blizzard's definitely keeping fans happy, or at least with new content before the next expansion comes out.
Yeah, word is this is going to be the last patch until Wrath of the Lich King. So
Are you still into that, any?
You have no idea. I'm actually.
Find yourself.
I'm very excited for it to come out. Yeah.
Are you excited? Really cool. Excited enough to cosplay?
I don't know if I'm going to be lightning bolting anybody anytime soon, but I'll.
I don't think you're that excited then. I think a real WoW fan would be.
Oh. Are we going to do this?
Cosplaying.
It's going to happen.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
I think. Even if you don't play WoW, it's a pretty significant event, and just following what happens in the gaming community when like a big game like that comes out, or expansion comes out. I mean, remember last time when Burning Crusade came out, it was huge. We went to that launch event and the Blizzard guys were there. It was pretty crazy. But for people who aren't big WoW players, I know, maybe me included, I'm very excited for the next Team Fortress 2 update. Valve has released some new information. I know, Andy, you're also excited. They're going to release a new map in the coming months. They haven't said exactly when. It's in the final stages of development. It's called Gold Rush, and it's a new gameplay mode called Payload, which is kind of like The Hunted. It's an escort gameplay mode. And what they're also doing is releasing a couple of extra weapons for the medic class and new achievements. And Robin Walker said that one of the things they're toying with is in Team Fortress 2, you can Uber someone and give them invulnerability for 10 seconds if you charge them up with your medic gun. But what they're toying with is the idea of maybe giving someone, instead of invulnerability, giving them 100% chance of critical hits, which I think deal like 3 times the damage for 10 seconds, which for offensive players sounds like a fantastic thing.
Now, I wonder, though, if you could have two medics on somebody and one of them Ubers them and one of them does that?
Yeah, we're thinking about that. That would be unbeatable.
Unstoppable.
Yeah. Heavy medics just got scarier.
Unbalanced.
Yeah. OP.
Well, that's the thing. That's the reason they haven't released yet, is they're still tweaking it with the idea, with different ideas. But we'll be playtesting it in a few weeks when we go check it out.
We'll definitely keep a report. What do you think about the fact that they've changed the VIP in the escort mission to a non-playable, I guess it's a minecart?
I think it probably is for the best, even though it takes away from the personality and a lot of the fun that you can have within a LAN environment. Obviously, on public servers, if you have any random VIP, there can be a lot of griefing and gaming the system. But I do miss the days where you could have one of your buddies play as a VIP, scared and running around and screaming for his life. More free content release. If you're one of the guys who bought Unreal Tournament 3, Epic has now released their first bonus pack, which includes three maps, two of them remakes of old Unreal Tournament maps. These are free on the PC, and also if you have the PlayStation version. I think this is interesting because this is the first time that I think any developer has released like significant stuff on the PlayStation content-wise. On the PlayStation for free. And Unreal Tournament 3, it's supposed to be one of those games that it's like the first game where you can really mod on the PS3. Have you guys heard about that?
On any console.
Yeah. I mean, people are importing their own player models. I think we saw like Gears of War player models and even like the Master Chief,
yeah.
In a PlayStation. Do you think console players are going to like that? Do you think they're going to, latch onto it and start creating content?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you obviously have to be a heavy PC user in order to create the content. I guess the question is whether people on consoles will use it a lot, and I think they definitely will, just because there's a lot of what little customization is available in console games. They seem to be all over, so and I'm sure they'll appreciate the extra stuff. Do you know in the content pack that's available on the PC? Do you know if they've added any new weapons or anything? I guess that one of the problems we had with Unreal Tournament 3 was that it did not have some of the game modes that Unreal 2K4 did. Do you know if this adds any more of that in?
I don't think so. It's just the three new arenas in the content.
Right. Well, I mean, at least they're adding stuff, and they're saying this is the first of what you must assume is going to be many of these packs, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the game came with shipped with like 40 maps, but I mean, new environments are reason to replay the game. And I think the fact that they're rehashes of very popular old Unreal maps is a good thing. It'll help transition players over to Unreal 3 who haven't transitioned yet.
I mean, you still need that reason to transition if you have and are happy with the first one. Or with 2K4, do you think this is the reason this pack will give you a reason to switch over?
More of a reason. I don't think it's going to convert people who definitely don't want who've decided in their minds that they don't want to do it, and like the old gameplay modes. But I mean, Epic has released a ton of patches to fix like the server issues that were in Unreal Tournament 3 when it first came out. So. There's more reason now,
right? So maybe if you pass it up the first time or when it first came out, maybe now is a good time to take another look.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Epic also they released some videos today. I know they're busy working on Gears of War 2. They released a video this past week showing off their Gears of War 2 announcement and some of the new engine improvements that they're doing to Engine 3. And yeah, I really want to talk about that because what's cool is not only the stuff they're doing, which include like some geophysics stuff, deformable environments, being able to render a lot more, many more characters on screen, so like hundreds and hundreds of units, all with the same level of detail as when you had just like four or five of them. But they're gonna be able to do this on basically the same hardware that you ran the last Gears of War. Because they're shooting for all the stuff to be in Gears of War 2, and it's all going to run on the Xbox 360, which is technically like 3-year-old hardware.
Right. So they're doing more with existing hardware rather than rather than pushing the hardware further and, you know, doing things they couldn't do before, but at the expense of like frame rate and things like that. So this is getting more out of the same stuff, which is always good to see.
Yeah, if you're one of those tech junkies who just love like visual demos, you should definitely check out the video. There's a cool segment in the video where they show like one of the characters shooting this giant blob of meat.
Yeah, they made a meat cube.
Mm. Yeah, and the meat deforms realistically.
And they also have a like a blob of.
do we have any like real world evidence of this?
it's just like when Norm was shooting that meat cube the other day. In out back, you know, with a shotgun, but they also had this blob of fluid
water.
Like,
or, yeah,
it looked like mercury, but and it was I guess I don't know what the best analogy is because it there's nothing in reality that really behaves like that because it kind of retained its shape, but it could
it was
be
like a very viscous ball of fluid, but right. When you shot it with a shotgun, it deformed like it was really amazing.
Right, and like the guy touched it, and it kind of stretched away with him, and then snapped back. It was pretty cool stuff that they're able to do with the Unreal Engine.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And some awesome water effects as well.
Yep. All right, that does it for news. We're going to jump into our next segment after this musical interlude.
So welcome to our next segment, Master PC Theater. Yes, we're doing it once again. And thank you very much to Vagabond, who correctly guessed that last week's script did come from Deus Ex. Foolishly, we chose a game that was Vagabond's very favorite. So he didn't even have to Google it. He just knew it right off the bat. I have a feeling that we're going to have to disqualify Vagabond from any future entries to this because he's probably going to get them all. But we're going to forge ahead. We're going to do this next one anyway. So here's the deal. We're going to reenact a scene from a PC game, and you have to guess which game it's from. Now, the first person to name the correct game on this episode's podcast comments at www.pcgamerpodcast.com is going to get serious props, just like the kind that we gave the Vagabond a moment ago on our next podcast.
Props.
Not actual physical props, not like prizes, but...
E-props.
Yeah, e-props. We're going to call you out and tell you what a great guy you are. Now, I will say this, though. I know that no one's actually going to listen to this, but please try and refrain from Googling a line.
It's fun.
It's so cheap, huh?
It's no fun when they do that. That's
It's no fun. It's no fun. Use your love of the gaming history to remember the game.
But don't make us cry.
Nobody's actually going to do that.
We're not professional actors.
Yeah, we are not professional actors at all. All right, so anyway, on to this episode's version of Masterpiece Theater.
Bum, bum.
Check these babies out.
Excellent, Manuel. With these, I can breed an entire army of winged messengers. Our revolution can spread now across the land, carried on the shimmering wings of justice, thanks to you, Agent Calvera.
I myself would also like to spread across the land.
But you can't. We need your dental work here to access the computer. I'm sorry, but freedom has its price.
This computer is shut off.
We salvaged the unit when the company threw it away, but we have yet to get it working. When we do, we'll need you to get us in the system.
I'll be long gone before then.
We'll see, Manuel.
So, you're not really a secretary?
I'm a spy, Manny.
Well, that's the last time we used that temp agency. Eva, you've got to get me out of town. They're going to sprout me.
You can't leave, Manny. We need access to the DOD computer network if we're ever going to find out what's going on. And we can't access without a salesman like you. The computer IDs you when you log on.
How does it do that? Fingerprints? I don't have any.
Your teeth, Manny. Haven't you ever noticed your computer scanning your teeth when you log on?
I thought that was just a power surge.
We need your teeth, Manny. We can't let you go. Sorry.
I have a little craft project here I want to show you.
Ooh, what's that? Custard?
Try it.
No thanks, I'm watching my figure.
Wow, that made a perfect impression of my teeth.
and left quite a chalky aftertaste, too.
Manny, this looks like a perfect impression of your teeth. We can use this as a mold to make a fake set of teeth and get into the computer system that way.
Good work, soldier. You are truly a friend of the revolution. Agent Calavera, and now, let me be of service to you.
Woo! All right, that's the end of it.
Yay.
End scene.
I know what it is. I know what it is.
So if you think that you know the answer, go right now to www.pcgamerpodcast.com. Go to our forums and put the name of the game in there. The first one's going to get props next week's episode. And if you would like for us to continue doing Master PC Theater, we definitely need your help. Game scripts are hard to come by, so if you have a favorite scene from a PC game, it must be a PC game. We were sent some Sega games this week from like the old Genesis games. It doesn't count even if it's you can play through
even
name
if you like
it,
right?
Yeah. Please send us a transcript of the scene to editor@pcgamer.com, and we just might act it out for you on the show. Now, you wouldn't be eligible to name the game yourself for fame or personal glory or anything like that, but we will credit you for having sent it to us. Scenes should be for at least two people, and don't make them terribly obvious.
Doing this has really given me a new appreciation for game writers and game voice actors.
Yes, absolutely. Not everyone can do it.
True that.
All right, let's move on. We have time for questions. Let's do like one or two questions.
Hey, guys, great show. Two quick questions. One, can you give the link or the website to where you can find out about the MPD sales you guys were talking about last week? And also, can you guys recommend other sites? It's cool when you guys talk about sites you guys like. Like Jeremy used to talk about Woot.com, and I found that and really liked it. If you guys could quickly go over a few of your favorite sites that listeners might not know about. Thanks. Bye.
Well, unfortunately, NPD is you actually have to subscribe to get those numbers.
Yeah,
it's an actual service. So I guess in the vein of like LexisNexis, and it's apparently quite pricey. So I wish I could tell you where to go for NPD numbers, but unfortunately you would actually have to subscribe. Speaking of Woot, we're actually all right now. In one window, we're looking at Delicious Links, and in the other, we're all looking at the Woot off.
Yeah, so if we're ignoring all of you, it's because we're participating in the Woot off.
We're watching the Woot off.
What's on the Woot off right now?
Right now, it's a flash
gigabyte drive. Yeah, flash drive.
Has anybody bought anything today?
No.
Has anybody here actually ever bought the bag of crap?
No,
I've tried.
I got totally robbed once. I bought it. I went through the whole process. It said shipping, and then no. I was wondering a couple of days later. What's going on? I haven't gotten any confirmation.
Where's my bag of crap?
Shipping
right? Emails.
Yeah, where is it? So I went on the site and checked like the order history, and it said it had been canceled on me. So,
it's way too popular now. I got in once back in 2004. I think it was the third bag of crap ever. But the thing is, back then you'd try to game it because you try to see, get the tracking number and see how heavy your FedEx package is. And the sad thing is, I never actually got my package because I was in a class and the FedEx guy came. I wasn't home, so they sent it back to Woot. But it was only 1 pound, so it wasn't anything good.
Yeah, good things come in small packages, Norm.
No. You want the 50-pound.
I will say that 50,
you want 50 pounds of crap, right?
One website that Dan and I have been enjoying a lot this week has been GamePolitics.com, which has been running transcripts from the Jack Thompson disbarment trial. And I strongly urge all of you to go to GamePolitics.com and read them, because some of them are just hilarious in how just out of his mind this guy is.
There's a web.
Yeah, he's very very disrespectful to the judge, and he has this persecution complex. It's pretty hilarious.
There's a website I really like for PC specific gaming news. It's run I think more by the UK game journalism crowd. A lot of the contributors are actually write for PCG UK. It's called rockpapershotgun.com. It's fairly new, and it's really awesome.
I'm going there right now.
I think you ran.
Is it .co.uk or is it .com?
Just .com. Jim Rosignol is one of the regular contributors to it.
Oh.
You guys ran a story.
He's one of ours.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Kieran Gillen. Sure.
And of course, there's also GamesRadar.com.
Yeah.
That's right. Part, run, don't walk, people. Umbrella.
The Week of Hate continues.
Yeah, the Week of Hate is pretty awesome.
People love the Week of Hate.
Are they going to do a video for the PC? Like 100?
They are. It's going to go up today, in fact, I believe. Today's Thursday, right? Yeah, I believe it's today.
That, you know, that's kind of counterintuitive, you loving the Week of Hate. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's the week. It's the week you love to hate.
You've just described Dan Stapleton. You've just described the essence of Dan Stapleton.
Hey, I have a lot of love.
Any?
Do you hate the Week of Love?
I've been loving on Sins of a Solar Empire, Fallout 3. I've been all love.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. That's what I was saying before. It's one of my favorite things to happen on the podcast and in general. Like. You know, I told you, I dreamed up this segment that I would love to get somebody to do, get you to do, called I Love Gaming, I Hate Gaming. That's just all about you being, like, I love Sins of a Solar Empire, but I really hate piracy! Like,
would the picture be, you know, you holding a dandelion or pulling petals from a flower?
Right. I love Sins of a Solar Empire, and then he'd crush the flower, but I hate, right?
Should not use a puppy for that.
Let's take one more question.
What's up, PC Gamer? This is Will from Columbus, Ohio. You're probably going to get like 18 phone calls on this, but the hardware Dalai Lama just messed up and told somebody that the 780i board from NVIDIA uses DDR3, and it doesn't. It's DDR2. The 790i, which is coming out soon, will use DDR3. So the 780i, DDR2, triple SLI. So I don't know if he wants to say something on the air about it. The kid was asking that versus a P35 chipset versus a 680i. And I'm using the 780i, and I saw a pretty good increase over the 680i. And overall performance all around, I'm using two GTXs and SLI. So it was a nice upgrade for me. But yeah, anyway, that's it. 780i, DDR2. Thanks. Bye.
There were way too many I's in that question.
Consider us corrected. No, I think it's fair. We dispensed some wrong advice last week. But what's interesting, who's the hardware Dalai Lama?
He's talking about Logan.
Logan, you're the hardware Dalai Lama.
I would say more like the Dalai Squirrel.
Free Tibet.
Actually.
All right, so what are you guys playing? Chuck, what are you playing?
What am I playing? Let's see. I'm still making my way through episode 2. I also finished for review. I said that I received Lost while I was actually recording last week's podcast, and then I actually played it this week. The review will be in our June issue. And what was that sound?
Nothing.
Was that the smoke monster I just heard?
The smoke monster. It's nanobots.
Well, Lost was an interesting experience just because it could be a very nice game once they finish it. I will say that. just a little buggy on my machine. Lots of crashes. But, you know, other than that, if you're a diehard Lost fan, you will probably find some redeeming value to it.
Sweet.
Also, one other thing I have to say, I'm completely sorry. I have failed to actually have a list of the finalists for America's Next PC Gamer Reviewer for today. So I'm still working my way through the entries. I have been dutiful in doing it, though. I've been going through quite a few, but I've been having to. There's been just a lot of rereading and decision making. So I'm trying to be fair to everyone.
Plus, this is the busy week in our production cycle, so we have had other things on our plate.
Aside from Ultimate Cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Dan, what have you been playing?
I was playing some Sins of a Solar Empire, some Kane's Wrath, some Crisis on Delta, and I think that's about all. That's been all I played in the last week.
Sweet.
Which, same thing I was playing last week, so a whole lot to add to last week's.
Kristen?
I actually fired up Guild Wars for the first time in, like, months yesterday in preparation for a story I'm about to do on another MMO. So that, and then I just keep goofing around in Portal, and I'm goofing around a little bit in Call of Duty 4 at home. I'm not really sure why I decided to pick that back up, but I'm dabbling, as usual. I'm grazing.
Multiplayer or?
How can you really dabble in Call of Duty 4?
I know, that's the thing. It's sort of like you're either like playing the game or you're not, but I'll just do this weird thing where I'll like play for a little while and then I'll like put it down.
I thought with Call of Duty 4, like you start to dab and then you
just go.
The game.
I know. I'm not really sure. I just have this weird sort of like game ADD thing going on right now where I'll do that and then I'll like, I was playing Bioshock on my Xbox, so I'll like go play that and then I'll like pick up my DS. I'm just sort of like all over the map right now. Not really sure what that's all about. I'll keep you posted.
Next intern Andy.
I've been bouncing between a lot of different games, actually. I've been, of course, enjoying the new World of Warcraft patch. And I found this great mod called The Specialists for Counter-Strike. It basically makes it kind of like a Matrix-esque kind of run-and-gun kind of gameplay thing.
For Half-Life, you mean, right?
Yeah, sorry, Half-Life. And then, as usual, Call of Duty 4. And I actually recently picked up Armia 2, which has been a lot of fun.
Oh, so you're one of the few people who liked it.
Yeah, I don't know why. It just grabbed me.
I don't know why I liked it.
So Andy's that second guy.
I like the co-op because I've got my cousin, he's deployed in Germany, and so he and I have been going through it, trying to beat it in all the different game modes. I like to see co-op nowadays. It seems like something that's kind of died out. So it's like Call of Duty 4. I think single player would have been great with co-op. I'm not saying it was bad as is. It was wonderful, but you know. I'm looking at you guys.
How's the lag playing with co-op with the guy in Germany?
It's actually not that bad. It's noticeable, but it's not quite as bad as I thought it would be.
Right on. Andy Bellman?
I have just started Indigo Prophecy because they put it on Steam a couple
weeks
ago.
Aw, fun.
Very nice.
And there's a game that I somehow passed up on when it came out, but I just barely started. I'm only like 2 hours in. I love it so far. I think
good and yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny how they put it as a movie. I sort of forgot how they did that. It's like start new movie. Like I don't know. That's funny for a lot of reasons. I didn't realize there was different characters, like three different characters so far that you jump between. I think that's a lot of fun, and the puzzles are pretty cool. They're like mundane things that turn into puzzles, like hiding your shirt. Like I think that's pretty cool. I don't know. Other than that, I've been playing TF2, and that's about it.
Do we know if they're gonna, if the Indigo Prophecy guys were planning to release a sequel? Wasn't there some, or another game, or didn't we hear something about that at some point? Obviously not, because nobody's saying anything. Mm-hmm. Nobody's piping up to say, yeah.
Logan would know.
Logan, I guess, would know, sure. Just curious.
He has his fingers on the pulse of the...
I think they should.
All right, and I've been playing a bunch of Assassin's Creed, and more Team Fortress 2, of course. Well, that does it for us for this week's engagement. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, feel free to send us a question via email at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call in. The number is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724. Am I right? Am I right?
That is right.
Oh, excellent. And keep your questions limited to 1 minute. You can also post on our podcast forums at pcgamerpodcast.com or subscribe to the magazine at pcgamer.com/subscribe. It's good stuff. For everyone here in the office.
Plus Andy.
Plus Andy.
Both Andy.
And those not in the office.
And double dose Andy's. Might not happen for a while again.
Double dose of Andy's. Andy's.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
So is Jeremy out there with you guys?
Yeah, somewhere. He's not in our office, I don't think. Not all.
He's in Emeryville right now, training.
Oh, that's cool. Does he happen to be back in the Bay?
Yeah. He likes it.
Always wanted to meet that guy. Seems really cool.
No, he's totally uncool.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of thought. I got nothing.
He's the jolliest person you'll ever meet.
Jolly?
Really?
Wow. I'm jolly? Santa Claus.
I think so.
But who's the Dolly China? Or the Hardware China?
Will Smith. Mm.
Aww.
Just kidding.
It's terrible.
It's the first name that popped in my head.
That's just what we need, is a big throwdown with Max PC.
I've been spending the last 3 minutes thinking of a segue to Fallout 3. And so well, Command & Conquer well, 3 is the third in a series, and you know what's another third in a series? Fallout 3.
See, I was going to go for the post-apocalyptic angle, but you have your own way.
How about just next on our agenda?
Oh. Expect an email from Logan Decker.
Am I in trouble? What did I do?
End transmission.
End transmission.